there's so much to life. And how do you kind of manage that with having young children and a wife at home that you still have to fill their cup as well?
You got to include them on those things that you do. You got to make it part of, you know, hey, Saturdays, we're going to go into the shop and wash equipment. You know, I'm going to bring Lila and Riley with me. I'm going to give Riley the hose and I'm going to, you know, walk around with Lila. You create that life kind of based around what you're doing, if that makes sense. I love being around my little girl. You know, I love being around Riley. So I want them to be involved in, you know, the things that I also love, which is working. My mental blocking of hard things is working harder.
Welcome back, everybody, to the ConExpo Conning podcast. I am your host, as always, Taylor White. With me today, I have another man, the myth, the legend, somebody who's been on the podcast before, but with a duo, now by himself, the inventor of Lucas Oil, the man who I owe $1,500 US to still, Luke Payne.
What's up?
Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I'll be honest, I totally forgot about that. So thanks for reminding me.
Well, for listeners listening, we just went on a trip to Montana and we were there and, you know, Luke is a very super nice guy. He's like, I'll take care of it. And then when everybody's back, well, you know, divvy it all up and transferring from Canada to US. And actually, I think what's left is actually just Dylan's share. So if Dylan's listening to the podcast, I'm going to cover his share. I just haven't sent it to you yet. So hey,
no worries, man. No, Montana trip was fun. It was a good time.
What a blast, eh?
Yeah, dude, it was. The planning was super easy. The execution was great. Our ride home, though, got a little interesting, but we made it happen.
So for everybody listening, it was myself, Luke Payne, Dylan Mercier, and Will Schuer. All just completely different stages, honestly, of life, of business, but all share the same issues and struggles and work-life balance and all this stuff. So Luke, actually, you were the one that kind of put us all together and was like, hey, like, I know you guys did something last year, but this year was just like, okay, like, let's go out there and do this. And I think a lot of the stuff I took back from it was super invaluable, but yeah, I got a little hairy on the way home there.
Yeah, the conversations had definitely made an impact on my end as well. It was just super fun to see people in different stages, the best way to explain it, I think, but then having the same problems just on different scales. I think that was really fun to just kind of invest some time into and really just have a good conversation, you know, and obviously spending a week together, we got to know each other pretty well and it was a good time. So, but coming on the way back, for anybody who doesn't know, which probably people don't know, Will decided to put it in the ditch. Dylan and Taylor had a flight to catch.
Prefix though, that starting the day before, I was sitting in the back seat saying, I swear to God, if you make us miss this flight, every time we'd go down to everybody listening, Will would go super quick. And we were going down from 9,500 elevation down to like 7,500 down the side of in Big Sky, Montana. And he would always try and skid and slide off the side of the road. And I'm like, dude, tomorrow morning, you're taking it slow. You're taking it easy. I got a wife and two kids at home waiting for me. And sure enough, we end up in the ditch.
We did. I don't think that's totally his fault because it was pretty icy. We might have taken that corner going a little bit too fast. Will. But we made it, which was cool. We came together and we somehow got ourselves out. There was no cell service. So we're like, all right, let's go, guys. And you guys made your flight. So
there's a lesson to be learned in that situation. You know, everybody, okay, it's 3 a.m. in the morning. We're on the side of the mountain. No cell phone service. Nobody's going to be on this road for another 2 hours. What do we got? We got a ratchet strap and four dudes that can help push something. So let's try to get out of this situation. Yeah, that was exciting. To back up a little bit here. So you were on the podcast before because you have your own podcast, the Dirtbags podcast with Luke Eggerbrong.
Yes, sir.
And this is the first time I was like, you know what? After Montana, I was like, I just want to get and just chat with Luke for a bit. So maybe to back up and for people listening, who's Luke Payne? What do you do? And why are you on this podcast?
Again, thanks for having me. I'm Luke Payne. I own a company out of North Dakota called Western Excavation, formerly was Black Iron Dirt. We ended up merging those two companies here this year. I've got a partner on the Western side. Our business is kind of go where we're needed. We're an excavation, mass earthwork, underground utility contractor. And I mean, we'll go North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, into Montana if we have to service our clients that we work well with and just kind of expand our horizons. Why I'm on the podcast? I don't know, man. I feel honored to be here. So I appreciate you asking me. But from the conversations kind of that we've had from the text of, hey, what do we want to talk about? I'm interested to really kind of dive into different aspects that you and I might have of ownership, of how to run your business, all of that type of stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's what I was most excited about to chat with you today, because I think we kind of covered some other stuff in the podcast we did previous. I'll make sure that that's linked, obviously, to go and listen to. But I mean, just being on a trip with you and kind of talking about a lot of the different dynamics, I know that myself, a lot of the takeaways that I got from the trip were just like almost a reassurance, I would say, for me, of like, sometimes I think, you know, maybe I'll surround myself with people who are like, you shouldn't say that, shouldn't do that. And honestly, it was nice being around just so relatable. Other young, hungry men who are getting after it in construction business and doing things with their life. You know, they're not standing from the sidelines. All four of us are guys who are doing something, trying to make a difference, trying to make an impact. It was just interesting, you know, it's times where I think, you know, I'd be tough, right? Then I'd hear Will or you on a conversation and I'm like, yeah, like they're getting after it and they're doing what they want. I would second guess that. And I'd be like, do you guys ever think like, what about the pushback from this or the pushback from that? And you're like, yeah, of course, obviously, in times, I mean, it's business, right? I think just hearing the conversations, to summarize, it was just a lot of reassurance on my end being like, okay, I'm not the only one that thinks this way or pushes back this way. And when we were talking about coming on the show, for me, I think some of the stuff that I wanted to talk about right off the bat was just like, what does it take to be a business owner in your eyes? Not in anybody else's eyes, but in Luke Payne's eyes. What does it take to run and own a construction company in 2024?
The construction world is tough, especially for, you know, young guys that are coming into. I mean, I started out in 2018 and I really didn't get into the space I am today until I'd say 21 into 2022. So there's still a lot that I got to learn. But through the eyes of like ownership and through the eyes of the owner, I'll tell you what, I mean, you got to have grit. You got to have mental toughness. You got to be really competitive. But at the same time, you got to be friends with these guys that you do compete with, because you can help each other in different ways. And I don't think you want to create any enemies. Patient, adaptive, tireless, you know, all of those words kind of define ownership in my eyes. What it takes, I think it takes stupidity too, because there's things that come up to where you're just like, I'm going to put my best foot forward, see where it goes and learn. I don't think there's a right answer on how to run a business, but I do think there's different lessons that you can learn in every aspect of experiences that can make you a better owner.
I could not agree more. And one thing I really like that you kind of mentioned in Montana and you're talking about here is kind of like the zero fail mentality. What in your eyes does that kind of mean? You know, zero fail mentality. Because for me, it's when shit hits the fan, you keep pushing through, you keep hammering. When a big issue comes up with a client or an employee, you push through it, you figure out the resolution, you keep hammering. What does the zero fail mentality mean to you?
You have to put yourself in a position to where you're not going to fail. Say you are running low on cash and people aren't paying their bills. What do you do? Okay, as the business owner, that is your duty to figure out whether you're putting money in yourself or you start banging on doors and be like, hey, I need to get paid for this. Or say you do have a situation with a general contractor and it's a fast decline. What are you going to do to get in front of it to really resolve that and step forward and be like, hey, what do we need to do to keep moving forward? So the zero fail, it can go into every aspect of business. It's just knowing like, I'm not going to fail. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure we're on the right path or to get something achieved. And just knowing in the back of your head that you can do it instead of maybe sitting back and thinking about it too much to where it kind of distracts you in a way, or it deconstructs your thinking to where this isn't going to work out. I don't know where to do it. And then you kind of go into a spiral of, we call it the emotional spiral. And you bring all of these factors that haven't even happened yet into the equation to where if you just think, I'm going to figure this out, what are my step A, B, C, and D, and go from there.
So a lot of the conversations that I've been having lately with anybody that I can kind of click with, and I know that we've spoken about this before too, and it ties well into, because I genuinely really like the zero fail mentality aspect and kind of having that in your brain whenever anything happens. Failing is going to happen. It's normal. It's how you learn, the best way to learn. But for me, it's how you kind of overcome that, over the hump of zero fail mentality. What's on the other side of that mountain of zero fail mentality? For me, I think we talk a lot now about today's society, and I mention it to people, other fathers, whenever I'm talking about my kids, right? They're talking about when you raise your kids and how you're going to raise your kids. For me, I think I want my kids, my daughter, my son, you know, and whatever future kids that I have, grow up and understand that in today's day and age, if you can put yourself out there, you can be vulnerable, transparent, be a good human being, be honest and trustworthy, but also be able to tell people what you want and how you want it done, you will conquer anything that you want.
Absolutely.
So essentially, what I'm trying to get to is, what's your take on, I guess, the next generation? Because there are so many winners in the next generation. I do not want to sit here and try to think people are saying, oh, the new generation, new society. Dude, I have so many winners on my team. I know so many winners below us. I mean, even Will, who was on the trip, he's like 16 years old and he's winning hard. But there's so many winners in each generation. So what's your take, I guess, on society? Maybe we're kind of in this softer society. How do you combat that? How do you fight that?
That question is based on who you ask. If you ask our parents or grandparents what they thought about our generation, they probably were like, oh, they're soft. They don't want to work. They expect too much, or they watch too much TV, whatever the case may be. But looking back at, you know, where they came from, I think our generation and the generation coming behind us is really good at adapting. I'll call it the sex appeal of working 80-hour weeks, working your fingers to bones, like hard ass times, right? Those aren't so prominent to our times right now. People are a lot more savvy. I know guys that use ChatGPT to form their emails for replies. In a simple case like that, I think we're just I think there's a lot of people that just understand how to do things easier. And maybe that comes off as they're a softer generation, or they don't work as hard. Well, if you can do something more effective and save time, I still think that's working pretty hard. I do think it's a balance scale, because I do think there is kind of a shift in, you know, the social norms, where the generation before us and even after us, the sign of wealth, I think, was a very big thing people wanted to achieve. And what was wealth to them? It was materialistic items. It was fancy cars. It was big houses. It was this huge persona of, I am wealthy. I have all of these belongings to my name, to where our generation and the generation after us, I feel like they're a lot more comfortable with less. And, you know, obviously people still like nice things, but I don't think the drive to go buy a $10 million house or this $200,000 car, I don't think it's so present anymore. There's obviously people that want those things, but I don't think that is something that is so in the society anymore. I'm struggling for words on how to kind of form that, but people like time over possessions, I feel like now.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think it's almost like people are valuing that healthy kind of work-life balance and figuring out how to have the comfort with less, and maybe trying to work less, but have a little bit more. And maybe that means free time. And a good example of the generational stuff is, we were just at a lunch meeting, and I was telling my dad how we were looking at going to PEI. It's an island in Canada for a week this summer with my family. I've never taken a summer vacation in my life because of the industry, because the business. But I'm like, you know what? Dude, I grew up with my dad not going on any summer vacations with me because it was like, nope, you got to stay and you got to work. But now I'm like, dude, you know what? We have people in place. We have an awesome team. And if I can't go away for 1 week out of the whole summer, no other vacation, just 1 week, then I'm doing something wrong.
Yep.
And that to me is that healthy kind of work-life balance, and maybe that new shift of like, well, maybe this is what success looks like to me.
Question for you based on that, kind of changing roles here a little bit. You kind of answered it in a way, but what does success mean to you? From our conversations in Montana, I feel like we're both very similar with, we want nice things, we'll pay for better experiences, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be such a liar if I sat here and was like, I'm not the guy who wants, you know, the fancy stuff. You got to be honest and true to yourself. And I feel like people call out easy these days. And I love that I drive a nice truck, you know, nice diesel truck. And I'd love a boat, nice big Donzi or something like that. So there is a side that I do appreciate, that you can afford the more materialistic stuff. And I think that, I mean, it's hard because people could be financed at the Yahoo and still appear to be, you know, making it. I think the ultimate thing for me, though, is that guy on the fancy new cigarette boat with the brand new dually pulling it. Is he talking about how he's got to be at work for 4:30 a.m. on Monday? And if he's not, his boss is going to be mad? Or is he kind of like, well, we might take it day by day, and maybe Monday it's supposed to be nice. I'll hang out with fam. And, you know, most like, to me, I think that's success. When I talk to somebody, it's time, right? Nice stuff's nice stuff. I'm just admitting that I do like nice stuff, but time to me is the ultimate. Can you just go and do that? Could you just go and block off an afternoon if it's super nice and your wife wants you home? Can you just go and do that? Sometimes with business, you can't, trust me. I'm not saying that that's every day, but that's success to me. How would you perceive that?
I think you hit it really well. I think everybody has a different definition of what success is, and it all depends on their motivation. Me, I love nice things. I will always pay for quality. I will always try to achieve more. Achieving more isn't always materialistic things, but that could be in business as well. I think my attitude towards success is me knowing where I'm at, what I need to do to help other people achieve. And if I can help other people achieve their goals, I'm going to be achieving my goals at the same time. But it kind of goes back to the same, or, you know, our previous conversation of like, what does that leadership look like to you? You know, in my head, mental health, I've never really considered something that I'm cognitively aware of, right? If I'm in a sad place, I'm going to go work harder. If I've got hard times, the zero fail mentality, hey, how do I get out of these hard times? You know, so that is kind of my definition of success is what can I overcome and what can I achieve? I'm a person that is not happy. Once I achieve some, I'm looking towards the next thing and the next thing. My success is constantly pushing myself.
I like that answer. It makes me think my answer was I totally agree with that. And like, I'm the same. It's once you reach something, for instance, I remember talk social media. I remember when I first started YouTube and there was a guy, Carson Shifsky. Shout out Carson Shifsky. And I remember he had YouTube and he had 5,000 subscribers and I had 50. And I was like, holy crap. Like, can you imagine what it's like to have 5,000 subscribers, dude? Like, this guy's probably got a brand deal where a company sends him stuff. Like, and it was just like this, holy, that must be so cool. Then you hit 5,000 and you're like, well, 10,000 is going to be cooler.
What's the next number? 100,000 be cool. I get a plaque at that, you know?
And dude, I have the plaque sitting in my office. I had 2 hours of me and my wife. I opened a bottle of wine. It was like, well, this is cool. And then I was just like over it and something else happened with work. And it was just like, again, that constant push of just like, okay, now my mind's on whatever else is going on. I got the plaque in the middle of the winter when work was super slow. And, you know, it was just so many other stresses just with cash flow and business. But yeah, you just kind of push and you just move on. And there's always the next thing. But I think that's what separates kind of like winners from losers.
Yeah.
And I think relating it back to also our previous conversation about society and stuff like that, there's winners and there's losers. And a lot of the time right now in kids sports in Canada, I'll refer to that. I don't know about US, but for instance, you know, I have some neighbors in the neighborhood, their kids are 6 or 7. They play hockey and they don't have team captains. They don't actually turn on the scoreboard, which is wild in my opinion.
I disagree with that. Yeah.
Tell me about it. Craziness. You're not turning on the scoreboard for your kids. So they're not understanding the value of, hey, we didn't work hard enough. I get that they're just 6 or 7 by all means, but putting your kids in sports is not just about them running up and down the field, getting exercise. It's about teaching them about leadership, about working as a team. It's teaching them that if we don't work hard enough, we're not going to win this game. They outworked us. So therefore they won. And we're taking that away from our kids. Isn't that sad?
It's taking away the confidence builders, like when you do win, and it's also taking away the opportunity to build competitiveness. So that is not something, and I'm sure we agree on this, that we probably won't be raising our children in that type of society.
Definitely not. I mean, our school board, the Otto Carlton District School Board, they just put out a thing saying, we feel like grade 12 students, seniors who are supposed to graduate, but actually have failed, we're actually going to start letting them just come to graduation and still walk across the podium because they feel left out. This is a real thing. This is a real thing. And it's like, I feel like I'm this crazy guy that's sitting back going, okay, am I the freaking weirdo in the room thinking that this is wrong? or is everyone else the weirdo?
Yeah.
Who's the weirdo in this situation?
Yeah, you're definitely not.
You didn't work hard enough, so therefore you're not passing. So therefore you don't get to go to graduation.
This brings up a couple different topics, right? So I'll start with the first one. This one's kind of treading a little bit lighter, but it's the life begins at the end of your comfort zone.
I was getting into it.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. Great rant topic. I'm excited to add to that. But again, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. You know, how do you know what your comfort zone is if you aren't pushed, right? So that's where my head goes right away. But then also, I don't want to bring religion into things, but also I was born and raised Catholic. I went to a Catholic school, and through the Bible and through teachings, we'd have religion every Wednesday. One thing that the Catholic faith is huge on is that we're called to suffer. What does that mean? Well, I think we're called to suffer in business. I think we're called to suffer in life because it helps us reach that future potential that we might have. And it all kind of ties together. Obviously, I don't want to get super deep into the religious talk, but that has always kind of stuck with me. Like, you are put on this earth to overcome things. You were not put on this earth to get a participation trophy and not worry about who didn't win the soccer game, right? If I'm playing that game and I'm 6 years old, turn the scoreboard on. I want to know who won, you know? But I think it was just how we're raised and the difference of that social norm into society as well, because I do know that requirements for certain testing are being dumbed down. The requirements for kids K through 12, they're a lot less. Like, homework isn't a thing anymore. I do think we do need to bring some suffering back and some hard, I can't even classify that as a hard time, but harder times to where we can prepare those people for real life, because that's not real life, in my opinion.
It's a false sense of reality. And it is very frustrating because, again, then if you make your child go to school and it's like, well, my dad and mom think it's stupid. Okay, then you're those parents, right? And I mean, luckily, we're from a smaller town. So a lot of people obviously kind of maybe have their head on straight. And I know, luckily, we're in the construction industry and 99% of the people listening to this podcast will definitely be agreeing with us. But and I want to go off and say, too, that like, by all means, it's, hey, if you think that it's okay, you know, to turn off the scoreboard and you want to raise your child like that, it's up to you how you raise your children. Trust me. Everything that I'm saying and we're talking about is how I want to raise my children and how I think that I was raised and what made me successful and what's made us success. I like your point about religion because it gives, and we had this conversation in Montana. I'm not a super religious person and you know, we've talked about that, but I do like the fact that it's a sense of faith and a sense of belief that there's more to it than just what's in front of us. I can't get into the religion talk because I don't know enough about it, but I think that's what it sums up to. And I think maybe it gives people a sense of belief and faith that, you know, like that old saying, hard times make strong men, whatever all that is. I always mess that up. But you know what I'm saying? I think that it kind of ties in really well with each other.
I agree. Yeah, I don't know the specific quote offhand, but I know which one you're talking about. But yeah, they do tie together. And that, not to get into the religion side as well, because everybody has their own beliefs. And I'm not one to push my beliefs onto somebody. But I do believe we are called to suffer as a society. And I do believe that we need to have some fortitude, some grit to overcome things. I don't think we were put on this earth to be comfortable. You even take the early 1900s to the 1960s. It was very hard times for people worldwide. And I look at that now and it just shows we have a fantastic opportunity ahead of us because we are in a very comfortable society. Okay, how can I put myself out of my comfort zone? How can I get more uncomfortable to learn more? How can I put myself in these situations where I really have to dig deep and really find something to find an answer?
Yeah, I also think you weren't just put on this earth to work and die. And I think that, you know, this work-life balance and pushing yourself, because don't get me wrong, I'm a workaholic and I'll work just as hard as the next guy, but you do have to compromise and, you know, relationships come into effect with that sort of stuff. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about next is how you kind of work with owning a business, doing a podcast, everything else that you have going on. I'm sure there's other stuff that you're part of, whether it be, you know, boards or community stuff or whatever. There's so much to life. And how do you kind of manage that with having young children and a wife at home that you still have to fill their cup as well?
You got to include them on those things that you do. You got to make it part of, you know, hey, Saturdays, we're going to go into the shop and wash equipment. you know, I'm going to bring Lila and Riley with me. I'm going to give Riley the hose and I'm going to, you know, walk around with Lila. You create that life kind of based around what you're doing, if that makes sense. I love being around my little girl. You know, I love being around Riley. So I want them to be involved in, you know, the things that I also love, which is working. My mental blocking of hard things is working harder. So I love bringing them into that as well. But then having those experiences, and don't get me wrong, it is tough because we are gone a lot. You know, there are times that, you know, there's things that we miss in childhood. There's things that we miss in day-to-day aspects. And that's something you got to live as a parent to like know that's going to happen. But there also has to be kind of a picture painted with that relationship. What are we working towards? What is the point of these efforts that we're putting into this thing called work, this thing called life, right?
Yeah. I just did a podcast with Dave Turin, Gold Rush Dave Turin. It should be out right now for people listening. He literally had an example of this work-life balance and he was talking about it, and I'll share it. And I was like, that happened to me last weekend. He's like, you know, Taylor, you got to make time for your family because there will come a day when your daughter has a dance recital and she's looking over at an empty seat and just sees your mom and you're not there. And I just got goosebumps again. I literally in the podcast was like, Dave, like you just almost made me cry. Like, I mean, my eyes got glossy because I'm like,
touched the heartstring.
Last weekend, that literally happened. Yep. You know, my daughter had a dance recital. I came here to the shop and caught up on emails and invoicing. And my wife after was like, oh, Kara kept looking over and to see if you were there. So then I think that it comes down to having a good wife at home for the business side. But also whenever I'm looking at now doing maybe a vacation, I think that like the gist of our conversation with Dave Turin was, I was like, there's sometimes where business comes first and people are always like family over business. Dude, 100%. I'm doing all this because of family. Do not get me wrong. But there are times when you own a business that you have to make the decision to choose business over family. Whether that's checking an email when your daughter's calling your name and wants to show you her doing something or little things like that or missing a whole event. There are times when that happens. And that's why I like asking people like yourself about you have a young kid and a wife, you know, what your answer is. And to me, it talks down to having the support at home.
Yeah.
Coming down to your wife. My wife is a rock star. And I'm not trying just to get her to listen to this and get brownie points. But I'm dead serious, dude. Like, I don't probably even say this to her, but it's like, dude, I'd be messed up without her.
Yeah. They're the backbone of the family. They're the ones that keep everything going because if you have a tough day, you need somebody to rely on too. And that's usually your wife. You know, your kids have a tough day. They need somebody to rely on and it's going to be mom. It's not going to be dad. But yeah, it definitely tugs at you a little bit when you are missing those moments and you're like, I hope I can get another one. But I also think that teaches them something too, because say the next one that you're able to go to, you make it so fun. You know, that was awesome. That was great. But then if you miss another one, you know, it makes them look forward to, okay, well, I can't wait for dad to be here. But then also I think it kind of instills a little bit in them, like dad's working. Dad's providing, you know, dad has to be at these places because that is giving me the opportunity to do these things. And obviously as, you know, 3 and 4 year olds, they won't understand it, but as they grow up, that's just going to become part of the norm. And maybe they'll adapt that type of mentality too. Like I'm going to be there for everything I can, but there are going to be times where I'm not able to make everything and that's okay.
Yeah. I think that they'll realize as they get older that we can go on a nice family vacation and do these things because dad is gone or maybe dad works hard, you know, and they instill that kind of hard work with them. To kind of change shift a bit, I am curious and about because a lot of our conversations, because I'll be honest with you, when we were in Montana, I mean, that was right around that time. This is about a month ago now, right?
It was that last week of February, I think we were up there.
Last week of February. I mean, that was such a difficult time internally for us. Just receivables are high. No one wants to pay. Cash flow is bad. Wintertime, it's just killer here. I wanted to talk to you kind of about that. And I wanted to understand your business because you had some guys in the shop putting some beacons on stuff. And what was also interesting is that you guys move locations a lot, not move locations where you're based out of, but you'll travel for work. And that was another big takeaway that I had from the trip that really clicked on my head. Two things, the guys coming to the shop in the morning and how that's a massive waste of overhead. And then you guys couldn't believe that we did that still. And then second thing, you're like, dude, you only go 60 kilometers away from your home base. Like, dude, like that's insane. So I wanted to ask you about your business kind of dynamic. What's it like in the wintertime for you? And maybe is that why you go a little bit further so that you do have more opportunity to not have to shut down in the wintertime, or it's not as hard, or is it hard sometimes?
It's still hard, right? When we were having the conversation of cash flow, every business owner at some point throughout, we'll call it a year span, you're going to probably have to come up with some cash yourself to maybe inject into the business, right? I've had to do it probably twice this year, but that's because it's what the winter brings. We're not in a normal winter right now. Normally we get quite a bit of snow and guys are very active with the snow removal. But this year, I think we've gotten a total of 10 inches.
Insane.
It's crazy, but it follows different patterns and, you know, it is what it is. But it's also given us the ability to catch up on our backlog. You know, we had a lot coming into the spring to where thankfully now we got caught up on that so we can take on more new projects, but it's not such a big billing thing. So it's like, okay, how do I navigate this? And this is really our first year. I'll say it's struggling, but I don't think we're struggling. It's just, yeah, cash flow's tight. Guys want their hours. You try to come up with ways to get their hours. You try to get creative on different things that you can offer. This year, we're doing a lot of demos. You know, that's giving guys their hours. But as far as the travel piece, we travel because we're in a very big area, but with a lot of competition. I'm not going to bid against guys that are doing a net 2% on projects. That doesn't make sense to us.
That's not fun.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's not fun.
Everything's got to go perfect. And then on top of that, you've got 10% of your money held up in retainage. So you're actually fronting 8% of that project. To me, that doesn't make sense. I'm going to go to the places that people don't want to go, or it is a harder area and there's risk of people breaking into your equipment, stealing your equipment. But I'm also going to charge for that. That helps me pay the guys better. That helps create a better atmosphere with what we can offer. And so we've seen that to where a lot of people around us are like, we're not going to travel. We're not going to go anywhere. So there's opportunity for us to, you know, pick these projects and, you know, relay to the guys like, hey, let's bust our ass from April to November. And then you get all the winners. If you want to take time off, if not, we'll find, you know, there's snow removal opportunities or demolition opportunities. Let's base this company around the company's needs is kind of our thought process behind it. Because again, everyone's got goals. Everyone wants to make money. Everyone wants to provide for their family. How can we be the most effective at that?
I think what really makes sense when you said it was, and I mean, we're even doing it right now, is finding the jobs and adjusting, because the guys do want hours, because we have a young crew that wants to buy houses, that want to get married, that want to have kids and do all this stuff. So they want the hours and they want to work. And do I blame them? God, no, not at all. Work as much as you can. The difficult thing is in the wintertime when there's not that work, we got stuff for them to do. Like I got a crew over at the pit today. I got three guys there. And that's all just unbillable work. So you got to suck it up on your end, because I won't see the reward from having them there screening topsoil or screening sand until late summer when, okay, I maybe don't have as many receivables because we made our own sand and we screened our own sand, but I'm carrying that cost for giving them hours from now all the way till then. And it's hard because some of the guys, it's like, well, just send me to the pit tomorrow. Send me here. And it's like, it's a difficult decision and it's a fine line, because are you going to bankrupt yourself? Well, no, but okay. But you want to give the guys hours. So then the wintertime is the struggle of, like you said, you got to be comfortable with, okay, you got to put some money in, put your money where your mouth is, then do that. That's kind of the struggle, I think, with keeping the guys busy. And I mean, we've managed to do that. Now, thankfully, work is picking up here in Ottawa. But it's kind of just crazy. And the thing with the traveling is it really made sense to me, because I'm like, we've limited ourselves for so long of just staying 60 kilometer radius. That's so insane. Like that is, I mean, we're like, hey, if it's longer than a 40 minute drive, we don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to change that mindset, man. If you want to grow and we're complaining about not much work or too competitive. That's why I loved hearing your guys' input on that. You and Will both were in the front seat of the truck and you guys like, couldn't believe. It's like, man, really? Like, so you're telling me like 45 minute drive is like too far? And I'm like, we kind of think that is a long drive. And it's like, what a privilege we've had getting all the work that we have had within 30 minutes, 40 minutes of where we are. Insane, man. It made me think so much about all that aspect that I was like, yeah, those kind of lessons, just talking to other people, are so invaluable, you know?
Well, you get different people's opinions and hopefully you can learn something that they made a mistake on that they probably know a better answer to. But as far as like the traveling, you know, I'm kind of intrigued on my end. Obviously, great that you guys can stay in such a closer area. But was, you know, is there pushback on traveling? Is there not necessarily, I don't consider like an hour to an hour and a half traveling. I consider that a day job. Hey, you're going to go out there in the morning. You're going to come back at night. You know, you might get back at 7 or 8. But also, I think that's kind of a stigma around construction. When it's work time, it's work time. My mom always used to say it. When it's making hay season, you make that hay. She wasn't a farmer, but I don't know why she always uses farm analogies. For the guys, even too, when they are traveling, they're getting paid to travel. So what does it matter to them? Hey, I'm getting 2 hours of just riding around in a pickup or an hour and a half or whatever the case may be to go to this job to where maybe it'll help make the company a little bit more money.
Okay, so you say, you know, hey, we're getting paid for travel. Where's the cutoff of I don't pay my guys to drive to work? Because you're not paying them to wake up and drive to work. You pay them when they show up on the job site, correct?
If they travel, though, it's different. Right. We provide company pickups.
It's a travel job.
Yes. Yes. If it's a travel job, everyone will bring or, you know, they'll go to the shop, grab their pickups, they'll get with their crews and then they'll head out. Depending on how they go. I mean, we have hourlies for guys driving. We have per diem pay, all of that. And then we usually cover the expenses when they drive. It's just kind of a well-known thing. Like, hey, if I'm traveling, you know, that's time that's coming out of me that, yeah, I got to pay that. Because that's guys' time as well, to where if they were just staying in town, sure, they can show up at 6 and go do their thing and screw around for the shop for a little bit, where these guys are getting up at 3, 4 a.m. and headed out and they're trying to get there by 7 a.m. to start a project. So I think you got to respect their time as well. And it just, it's hard to, I shouldn't say it's hard. It is kind of hard to really kind of bring this conversation into an employee level to show like the vulnerability of it, but then also you can't show the bad side of it where it's like, hey, I'm spending this much. You know, they see it as like, well, you're not paying me for this, or this isn't working out, or it doesn't matter. I'm hourly. It's good to kind of paint that picture for your employees too. Like, hey, this is our big picture, but I need your help to achieve that. What can I do better on the business end to help achieve that with you and me?
What's interesting is you mentioned having this conversation on the employee level. That's interesting because I'm currently trying to curate how to explain to my guys. So how this conversation came up in Montana was, you know, not the traveling aspect, but I told these guys that like, hey, you know, when we have 23, 24 guys in the summertime, everybody comes to the shop in the morning and then clocks in, gets in a company truck and then drives. It could be right by their house or past their house or the job site was on their way, but they still came here. And you guys were like, whoa. And I've known that this was just a nasty, nasty habit to have that happened. And I thought about this the other day, you know, how did this happen? We started with 3 people. We had 3 people 4 years ago. And then you add a 5th and a 6th. Yeah, we go to the shop in the morning, have a smoke and a coffee, and then we head out. So then it's like, okay, then it's compounded to 20 people. So now I have 20 people in the summertime coming here, clocking in, getting in a vehicle, driving to a job site. That is unbillable hours because when my estimator estimates a job, he's not accounting for, okay, half an hour of travel for everybody on that job site in the morning from the shop to it. And then at the end of the day, another half hour travel from the job back to the shop. And then for the, my guys are good and I trust them, but let's say there's another 10 or 15 minutes of shooting the shit with the guys, having another smoke, goofing around, talking about the day, then clocking out, getting in the car, going home. So now I got an hour and 15 minutes times 20 people a day that I'm paying for that is coming out of pure overhead. And that's what Will, he's like, yeah, like pure overhead that you're just burning. And I was like, this is such a dirty habit that we have to stop. So when you said employee level conversation, it's all ties together. That is such a conversation. And it's in my own head that I've been having for the past 2 weeks. We're having a pit day next Friday, you know, talk about the year and the year ahead, have a safety meeting, have a talk about the business. Changes that we've had. And that's one of the things. So how would you present that? All right. You're my ChatGPT. How would you formulate this conversation trying to explain to your employees without telling them it's so that, you know, there's more profits in the business. And then it's like, you want more profits? Well,
we want more time. Yeah.
How do you, and I know my employees listen to this podcast. This is a real conversation. Yeah. How do you formulate that? And how do you make it make sense? So you don't sound like Monopoly Man.
100%. Well, it is a tough conversation to have, I think, because you have those employees that are there for the business, and you do have those employees that are, hey, I'm just here for a paycheck, right? It's usually those, I'll call it the 18 to 22 year olds, right? This isn't my full-time career. I don't want to be a laborer, whatever. But it's those people internally that it's like, hey, I can have that conversation on a different level of understanding. But bringing them all together, in my opinion, I love talking about numbers with people. I can formulate numbers pretty easy. And as you were kind of going on there, so you said you got what, 25 guys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Say they spend an additional hour at the shop every morning doing whatever they do. Okay. So 25 times 25, say your average hourly is 25 on those guys, you know, some more, some less. It's $625 a day in just waste of time in the morning, right? And then what's our working days? We're lucky if we get, say, 140.
Yeah.
So that times 140, there's $87,000. Well, 87.5. And by showing those numbers, you know, I can present this and be like, how can we change this? This is money that's coming out of everybody's pockets, because there's $87,000 that we could be doing to upgrade equipment. We can put towards bonuses. We could do a company vacation for this money. But it's, I think, taking their insight and figuring out, hey, what are some of your wants too? If we try this, let's work out a way to where everybody kind of gets a benefit from it, and not the here's a handout. But I think, say, I'm going to give $20,000. If we can save that time, I'm going to give $20,000 and give it to you guys. Do you think that would be enough motivation for them to maybe change things? Or whatever the case, that puts an additional $60,000 back in the business's pocket.
Yeah. And everybody walks away with $1,000.
Yeah. You know, having those conversations and really bringing it down. Cause I mean, sometimes I feel like people think business owners just have unlimited amount of money. Hey, I've got this gold pot I'm going to reach into.
You don't?
I don't. Do you? And if you do, tell me how to get it.
I got a tree.
Got a money tree? Oh, you'll have to send me some seeds. But I think for them, you know, and the people that are there for the company will really invest themselves in it, because obviously they want to grow. And if there's opportunity to make more money, why would you not try it?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a difficult kind of situation. And I think my main thing that I want to communicate to them is that they know, like, this is something I've created. I'm not blaming you guys. This is not your fault. This is something that I let happen, and me alone, you know. You could chalk it up to, hey, we told this PM that we wanted guys just going to site, but, well, who's steering the ship? Okay, great. Well, all fingers point back to me. So I think that I have to take ownership for it and explain to them that, hey, yeah, there's different stuff that we can do incentive-wise to make sure that this money that you're thinking that, you know, all of a sudden the business is just whatever, it's going back into machinery and nice stuff and this and that. Another conversation that we talked about that I found very interesting was the incentives and how to incentivize your employees. And I'm not sure, I think it was more of a conversation. I know that, you know, we were all kind of just chatting about this, and we're all trying to, you know, figure out ways of, okay, is it phantom stock in the company? Is it a heavy equipment operator gets, you know, 0.5% and the foreman gets 2% of this phantom stock company employee bank account that if they do good on the job, money gets added in. If they do poorly, they have to understand that they did poorly. So they have to be okay with money also coming back out of that bank account.
Yep.
Have you ever ran into kind of this conversation of like, okay, we want to run more profitable. I want to expect more from my guys. So maybe we can run lean and do more, because that's every business owner ever. Have you ever had that thought or conversation? Have you thought about it more of like, what could be if we made this happen, this incentive, employee incentives or stuff like that?
Absolutely. I think everybody has thought of it. And it's what systems need to be put in place for this. Because obviously you're not going to give somebody that's been at the company maybe 4 years a percent of the ownership. That just doesn't make sense. How we're trying to do it is, who is here, right? Who is given everything that they have? Let's talk to them and say, what are your goals? You know, what do you want to achieve? What do you want to do in your career? You know, I'm a PM right now, but you know, one day I'd really love to get into sales or something. Okay. Do we have a business development role that can maybe get morphed into this? If we kind of build a basis and build like a succession plan for the people that want to be there, then I think it becomes a lot easier and it becomes a better conversation, because then they can be vested. Then they can understand, here's what I have if I achieve these goals. Here's what I could have if I make these steps, if I do these things in my career and I'm going to stay at this company. I feel like business owners, they have this conversation a lot, but what systems do they have in place to show that? I don't think there's a very good ladder that anybody could bring out at any time and be like, this is how we did that.
What you just said makes so much sense. It's awesome because what you're saying is don't just talk about, hey, we want to promote within and we want to be show people that there's, it's like actually give people the tools to succeed.
It's crazy. We took on Randy Blunt as a mentor basically this year.
Randy.
Love Randy. Shout out Randy.
Great guy.
But it's really cool on how, you know, they came to our office one day and our whole conversation for that day was system implementation. What systems do you need to implement? And how hard it is once you get to a bigger scale to get everybody on board with those systems. So it's, you know, it's figuring out what accounting software, what daily tracking you're going to use, stuff like that. But then also systems that need to be in place is that succession plan. It was really cool. He said, when I was building this company, Luke, he's like, I wanted to make millionaires. And I was like, I've never heard a company owner say that he wanted to make millionaires within his company. And for him to have that vision and to understand, like, this is what I have to do. And he told, I think there was like eight people in the company that became millionaires or something. So I'm like, how do you achieve that? It's crazy. But it shows like, hey, that can happen. But what are the steps that are needed to be taken?
Dude, that's why I didn't actually know that about Randy. Yeah. That's insane.
Super cool. Super cool.
And dang, holy crap.
He didn't give us like that ladder. But my next email to him is be like, how do I create millionaires out of our company? And he'll probably be like, you got a long ways to go. But, you know, it'll be a cool conversation.
You mentioned daily tracking. I just want to ask you about that. So currently right now, you know, foremans have iPads. We have Google Sheets where our estimators were actually put in the software. Okay, so for this demo example. So this is, I'm talking foreman job tracking sheets. We estimated there was 200 ton of debris. We put, you know, 35 hours on the demo, this and that. And the foremans go in and they update their Google Sheet and they okay, great. Well, we were actually 179 ton. And then there's a percentage saying, you know, great, you've 79% of your allowance. And then that box stays green. If they got closer to 200, it would turn yellow and say, hey, not much. And if it was over 200, then it would go red and they would know that it was no good. What do you guys have so that you know what's going on the job sites and then how your estimators can see, how do we price it? How are we doing on the job actually?
This year, we're going to try Busy Busy. We've been doing a couple different demos with the Busy Busy apps. And
oh, my God, Busy Busy, dude. That sales guy is, me and Dylan have a history with these sales.
Do you? Hell yeah. Well, this was a lady that's been really kind of engaging us in the conversation.
They're great. They're great. I'm not laughing at Busy Busy. There's this one sales guy, the stuff he says, he's hilarious.
Yeah. You'll have to inform me on those.
I'll fill you in.
Deal. But I mean, it's very cool because you can cost track, you can time track, you know, everybody has their hours based on that. If we're on a prevailing wage job, we can select what that person is as far as equipment, what they were doing. And we're able to really see in real time where we're at on certain projects. How we were doing it in the past, we were doing paper and pencil. You know, we were trying to track receipts with folders per job. It just got too tough. We're trying to autonomize it with this Busy Busy, and I'm anxious to see how it goes. Again, that was a Randy recommendation to say, try this one out. See what you guys think of that to just make things easier for everyone as whole. Because how we do it, right? We've got our estimating team that estimates. But then our project managers, they're the ones that are following the budget. And they're supposed to relay that to the foreman. Foremen are supposed to relay that to their crew.
That's how the process has to happen. And I guess what we're kind of doing is like not utilizing the Busy Busy end of it, but so much, you know, curating these formula Google Sheets that update in real time when they're out there with their iPads and they're putting in, I can look as it got updated and be like, okay, great. So at the end of the day today, you know, they're at 76 ton. Okay, good. Oh, shoot. They're kind of getting over on their hours for supervision. So that's kind of, I guess, from an how we're looking at the job tracking. But I wanted to ask you about that just because that's something that's a conversation right now is how do we digitize and get information from what's happening in the field to the office, because your estimator needs to know that stuff. Like your estimator needs to know, how am I pricing these jobs? And it's up to everybody along the way to get that information and relay it back to the estimator. So he knows like, shit, I'm pricing these jobs and I'm not even close to what we're using, or hey, I need to be doing more.
Yeah. Well, it's keeping that historical data for, you know, bids down the line, because Chase, one of our operators, he's really cool in how he says this, but he goes, the process is always the same of how, you know, he operates as a foreman basically. And a lot of these projects, they're a lot of the same components. So you can look at that historical data and say, where did we win? Where did we lose? What do we need to change going forward?
Totally agree, dude. Sounds like you have a lot going on this year. I love sitting down and having a conversation with you. I always think it's super genuine and super real. I feel like we share a lot of the same thought processes. And I really appreciate you coming on today and talking about those things.
No, man. Thanks for the invite again. Hopefully there was some value with the conversation. Like you said, it's just fun to sit down and talk and genuinely have a conversation and really listen to each other, engage in what they've got to say.
Totally agree. Everybody, thank you for listening to this episode of the Con Expo Con Egg, brought to you by our good friends over at Komatsu. Appreciate you. Catch you guys on the next one. Take care.